Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. Layla Mudin is the nutritionist at the Hoffman Center. I work with her on a daily basis. She has a registered dietitian credential as well as a master's degree in the field of nutrition. So we're fielding questions, and we're about to field a question from the sister of a pilot who suffers from hypertension. Is that correct?
Yes. This is from Karen in England. Here, hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. This is her husband that she's talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My husband is a long-haul pilot flying from London to all parts of the world every month. He's 51 years old, has high blood pressure, controlled by medication, but not ACE inhibitors, along with yoga and meditation. I'm wondering what supplements would be useful. He's exposed to all that radiation on the plane. Someone suggested high doses of CoQ10 before each flight. What do you think? Anything else? And by the way, his cortisol is all messed up, as he is on a different schedule literally every single day. Nothing regular about his schedule at all. Thank you very much for answering this question and for all that you do. From your fan in England.
Okay, so this is a very interesting question, because pilots are subject to a lot of stress. Number one, they have circadian stress because they're shift workers and they go through time zones, and that's very bad for the system. Ultimately, I mean, it really has a long-term negative effect. I mean, this is an occupation for young men and women, because as you get older, it gets harder and harder for your body to cope with jet lag, and it takes a toll. And some of the pilots that I've seen, the result has been very high levels of cortisol, or sometimes burnout where they don't produce any cortisol at all. I would want to do a cortisol test with saliva to see if there's too much or too little cortisol production. The electronic cabin that these pilots sit in, it's just full of electromagnetic radiation. It's a very, very toxic zone when it comes to EMRs. And that's a hazard. But in addition, when you fly at high altitudes, you're going to be a little higher up in the Earth's atmosphere, and you're not going to be protected by a blanket of air from cosmic rays and gamma radiation from space. Mm-hmm. And so among people who are frequent flyers or airline personnel, there may be a slightly higher risk of certain cancers, because the gamma rays hit your chromosomes, they can damage the DNA. And when the DNA goes awry, you get diseases like leukemia, cancers, and that's actually been shown. It's not like they don't have like five times the rate, but they have slightly higher rates of certain types of cancers. Cabin air is another issue, you know, because you're really breathing recirculated air that's not the greatest quality.
I imagine glutathione. For at least the radiation aspect.
Glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, which is a precursor. By the way, melatonin, which is a good time setter and really will help reset the circadian rhythm, you know, taking it according to the desired sleep time where you're going to. In other words, you want to say you're going to London, you know, from New York, and you would actually set it to your desired sleep time in London and take it, an hour prior to that time. But melatonin is also radioprotective. It's protective against radiation. We know this from studies where radiation is administered deliberately for cancer, and melatonin can offer some protection. Curcumin is actually protective against the effects of radiation. And
I just want to distinguish here that the amount of melatonin for a cancer patient would be way higher. It would be a 20 milligram rather than the amount of melatonin somebody is looking for to get a good night's sleep, which is anywhere from 3 to 5 milligrams, Dr. Hoffman.
Correct.
So that it's important, I think, to make that distinction for anybody looking for protection from cancer or already has cancer and needs to take melatonin. That would be the dose, would be closer to 20 milligrams.
Good.
And you'll sleep.
Right. And this is just unforgettable, because I had a pilot as a patient many years ago, maybe, you know, nearly 20 years ago, and it was actually very instructive, because he was exhausted. He was suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome. The only time that he actually felt energized was when he was in the cockpit, because he was called upon to do very exacting tasks. But he was absolutely no good when he was off duty. He was exhausted all the time. And we looked at him and did analysis. We found he was a young guy. He was in his early 40s, very low testosterone. But he was burnt out. He was burnt out from the flying regimen, and he was burnt out also because he was very involved in the pilots' union, and there was a lot of struggles in the 1990s about unionization of the airline industry. And so his testosterone was just gone. We gave him testosterone, and it was actually a complete fix. He felt totally rejuvenated. It was remarkable.
Wonderful.
So this is something, you know, 51-year-old who's having some problems, I would look at DHEA and testosterone for sure. Unfortunately, we can't do that for you, you know, because you're over there in England. But see if you can see a complementary practitioner or someone who at least is nutritionally attuned over there, who can perform this type of analysis and find out if he can be optimized. It's really worth it because you can really extend his professional career if you do the right things, because it's a burnout career. It's like many, you know, careers, you know, they can be lucrative, and it's great to make it to the end of the line where you get yourself a good pension. But sometimes it takes such a toll on your body that it's worth investing a little bit in getting an analysis to find out if you're doing the right thing to protect yourself.
True too. But in the short term, for his high blood pressure, let's see, pycnogenol, olive leaf,
yes,
magnesium,
the high taurine, blood pressure, right.
We got CoQ10.
And
I'm
liking you know, arginine, but also the new thing on blood pressure lowering is that arginine is helpful, but also citrulline. And I think we're going to start stocking some products that are combos of arginine and citrulline. I think they show promise in opening up the blood vessels and promoting circulation.
There seems to be a synergistic effect there, which is which is interesting. Terrific.
Magnesium, did we say magnesium too?
Magnesium. Yeah. Magnesium taurate, which is almost a combo of magnesium and taurine.
And, you know, we have to say that hypertension, there are many subtypes of hypertension. There are some people who have insulin resistance. In fact, a high percentage have insulin resistance by eating less carbs. Their blood pressure will come down. They'll lose weight. Other people have it because of they're sodium sensitive. But the majority of people with hypertension are not sodium sensitive.
That's true. It's only maybe 20 to 30% of the population. It may even be less than what I just said,
right?
That are sodium sensitive. So, yeah.
And you know, while this seems like a form of biological determinism or racism, it seems that African Americans respond more to the sodium restriction and potassium augmentation. Potassium can be a blood pressure lowering agent. And, of course, the diet in America is skewed the other way, high sodium, low potassium, and that can cause problems.
Yeah. Okay, Karen, thank you for your question. Best of luck to your husband. All right. We have, this comes from John in Sayville, and he says, Doc.
Hey.
John. Hey, Doc. My daughter is expecting our first grandchild in August. What supplements should she take now and while nursing our grandson to optimize his health? She's been taking Orthomega Select DHA during her pregnancy. What else should she add now and after delivery? Do you recommend vitamin D drops for the baby to ward off illness and thereby reduce
the
need for antibiotics?
There's a lot of stuff here. You know, we're going to start asking, you know, what type of retirement plan the baby should be on, and, you know, what can they take in their old age?
Start a 529 program.
we're going like we're going way down the line here. So let's confine it to prenatal nutrition, because there's a lot in that question.
Well, hopefully she's taking a prenatal. If she's due in August,
hopefully she's not taking a prenatal, because the vast majority of prenatals are bad, in my opinion. Mm. They're poor quality, and they contain the wrong kind of folic acid, which is...
That's true, but, you know, that's just emerging right now, Dr. Hoffman. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about that.
Well, here's the deal. You know, we're concerned...
Because most obstetricians are putting all of their patients on prenatals.
Well, here's the deal. After much, much struggle, it was finally acknowledged that folic acid is important for preventing birth defects. So that's actually a triumph of nutritional science. The problem is that folic acid is a synthetic form of folate, which you get from green leafy vegetables and liver and certain foods. And the more natural and bioavailable forms are 5-methylfolate and folinic acid, which are, you know, hard to find in supplement form. You now can get them from certain companies, but most of these companies don't sell retail. The retail market is not using so many of these alternative folic acid forms. And so if you use the argument goes something like this. If you use folic acid in pregnancy, you may avert disaster in pregnancy, such as a neural tube defect or a stillbirth. But a child may be born who might otherwise have been aborted with some serious liabilities, plus a real resistance to folic acid, because all that excess folic acid creates a sort of a receptor resistance to natural folates. It's almost like the baby is hooked on high doses of folate, and then when that's abruptly withdrawn, the child can be more prone to problems like autism spectrum disease. That's one of the theories behind the causation of autism, although probably many different factors that are involved in an autistic outcome. So the answer is to take a prenatal that has 5-methylfolate or folinic acid in it, and or what we do these days is we just prescribe we don't prescribe a prenatal, we prescribe individual vitamins. I don't think that a pregnant woman needs every single vitamin under the sun. The key ones are fish oil that's rich in DHA, so I like DHA Select from Orthomega. That's actually what we give to our patients. Higher doses of vitamin D is at least 2,000 international units, but I would check levels. And a probiotic, because you want to have good intestinal flora. And we also like methylfolate, because methylfolate would be important. And we would also suggest something like choline, because choline also seems to have something to do with the neurological development of the baby. And then we also test specifically, you know, there's a workup involved. We might find that a mother has certain allergies. A mother may have certain specific vitamin deficiencies, chinks in her nutritional armor, which we try to fix. But just taking a multivitamin or a prenatal, I guess it gives you kind of a rough insurance policy, but it's by no means a guarantee of a perfect outcome.
So, you know, it's interesting. When I was an undergrad, I was told by my professors, we were all told that folic acid in a supplement or in fortified food is actually more bioavailable than the folate naturally occurring in food, which is very interesting mm-hmm. because now that's turned on its head.
Right.
And that was the reason for all the fortification, yeah.
Right. But the other thing that we're looking at is the MTHFR gene, and we're now testing yes. quite frequently for that. And that gene is a critical gene for metabolizing folic acid, and a very high percentage of people have defects in that gene and require more folic acid. And there's a myriad of diseases that are associated with folic acid deficiency, not just neural tube defects in pregnancy, but many psychiatric conditions, many even cancers. This may actually help us solve the riddle of why folic acid is at the same time preventive of certain cancers, but in some cases can be a promoter of cancers. It may be that the wrong type of folic acid may overaccumulate and may stoke the proliferation of cells in certain types of cancers. We're just beginning to understand this nutritional connection. And so we've actually done an entire podcast, if you go back a couple of weeks, with Dr. Ben Lynch. It was a fascinating mm-hmm. podcast where we discussed this in depth. And it's a new emerging field. And I think that you who are listeners to Intelligent Medicine, nutritional aficionados, many of you health professionals, we're going to have to look at this more and more and consider some of our supplements with regular folic acid as things that we need to upgrade.
Yeah. It's all fascinating. Well, then, besides that, other than that, she's taking the Orthomega Select DHA, which is excellent during pregnancy because we like DHA. Taking additional vitamin D is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And we like to check levels. That's really the best way to do it, is to check levels and make sure that she's taking at least 2,000 IU daily. Taking phosphatidylcholine is also helpful
mm-hmm.
in the administration of the EPA, DHA, and all of that. And a good probiotic.
Good. Do we have any other questions?
We do. Actually, this is from our good friend and colleague, fellow colleague, she's an RD, this is from Kristen, and she writes this hoping, and this is actually a topic in the newsletter this week that I'm answering the question to, but I know you and I can talk about this a whole lot, Dr. Hoffman. Hoping you and Dr. H can explain why a low-fat diet would be potentially detrimental for my mother, who has just had two stents put in last week and is being told by her cardiologist to go on an ultra-low-fat diet to lower her LDL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So really, about the LDL, first of all, it's not just a matter of having high LDL for established coronary artery disease, but what that LDL is doing is it oxidized, number one. Number two,
which we routinely test for.
Yeah. And also the NMR or the VAPS profile, there's a little controversy right now about which one is better, but needless to say, you want big fluffy LDL pattern A particles as opposed to the small dense atherogenic pattern B particles. One, the biggest problem with an ultra-low-fat diet is it's immediately higher in carbohydrate. A higher carbohydrate diet in most people will cause that LDL to become small, dense, pattern B, atherogenic, which is precisely what you don't want. So an ultra-low-fat diet is really, really not recommended. And I wish, Dr. Hoffman, I really wish that doctors who are not trained in nutrition like yourself would make more recommendations or referrals to qualified nutritionists.
Right. I mean, I refer all the time. I mean, when I have a patient who has a gynecological problem, gynecologist. When they have a gastroenterological problem, gastroenterologist. When they have a neurological problem, it's got to be a neurologist, and so on. And we just don't get the reciprocal kind of referrals where a patient, like say they have a lipid problem, and we're expert at dealing with that. That's what we do. We've studied this. We spend, not just time with patients, but hours every week studying the literature. And trying to understand and interpret it, that's right in our wheelhouse, and that's precisely
right.
what our mission statement is at the Hoffman Center. So it's a simplistic notion that if you stop eating fat, that the fat will stop clogging your arteries. I think that notion has been thoroughly debunked, and more so, articles are coming out and books are coming out. We're about to interview author of a new book. I forget the title, but it's kind of catchy. It's about, it's called A Big Fat Surprise. Fat Surprise by I think her name is Teicholz. And uh-huh. Nina Teicholz is her name. And she's really creating a splash with this. It's been all over the papers. She's being interviewed all over the place because people are aghast at the notion that actually maybe carbohydrate restriction is the way to go and that saturated fats are actually not the cause of heart disease. I mean, thought that we should, be more flexible in our thinking and rethink this because it has worked out well. And as the movie Fed Up points out, this whole way of thinking has been accompanied by a major uptick in our incidence of obesity, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. It hasn't stemmed the tide. And so that hypothesis has not been a successful one. I admit that if you go on a virtual starvation regimen, you can, and you fast and you eat salads and tofu and brown rice, you can lower your cholesterol dramatically. You can drop a lot of weight, and that's to the good in terms of cardiovascular prevention. It's not an anomaly that Dean Ornish's patients did well on that type of regimen. There's studies to prove that. However, there are other health liabilities associated with that kind of regimen, and especially to expose an elderly person to that kind of regimen. I presume Kristen's mother is older. There might be some other liabilities, lowering cholesterol dramatically. Well, cholesterol is important for the brain. As you know, it's important. It's a precursor for every hormone in the body practically. And so, we're thinking a very narrow focused way about the coronary arteries. We got to think about the whole person.
That's true. Absolutely. So best of luck, Kristen, to your mom.
But, I know Kristen's in a position, a tough position. She's a professional nutritionist,
mm-hmm.
and her mother's got a doctor. And there is no tougher position than being a professional nutritionist up against the medical establishment. I've been in that position myself with my own mom, you know, where doctors were saying, you know, this doesn't matter, don't bother. And after all you are is your, you know, the person's son or daughter, and you don't get a lot of credit sometimes for, you know, it's tough.
It's true. Yeah.
It's like, what do you know? I mean, I used to diaper you. I mean,
exactly. You know, what do you know? You're my kid. Exactly. Right. That's the look I would get from my own mother. She'd look at me sideways. Like, what do you mean I can't eat that? Mom.
So let's stick to treating strangers. How about that?
Yes.
I think there's less counter transference associated with it, I think, is probably a better way to go. So anyway, so Kristen, all the best in trying to implement those suggestions, but it's tough. It's in the face of a strong recommendation from a doctor. You know, patients have this like almost superstitious faith in the wisdom of their doctors. The doctors, if they can only, you know, adhere to their doctor's suggestions, it'll ward off all manner of misfortune. And unfortunately, with this particular advice, I would dissent.
Right. I agree.
Okay, so
you've got a very interesting article in the newsletter.
Yes, the newsletter that's coming out
crisis.
This week. Yes, yeah. I have an interesting slant on that. And spoiler alert, the article you know, talks about the VA crisis, and I talk about my own experiences with the VA, and I have some constructive suggestions about what the VA could do to be a better exemplary model for healthcare in America. And, you know, it is a federally funded and supported single payer system, and it could really be a model for outstanding healthcare. But it's got all the downsides of our current embattled medical system, and but they're gradually exploring new ways to treat patients in a more personalized, integrative, complementary fashion of the VA. And it's very exciting. Hopefully this crisis, you know, will be an opportunity, and it won't shut down those budding initiatives to use diet, lifestyle, meditation, yoga. These types of modalities really should be tried on our vets who come with very challenging problems. IED, head injuries, traumatic brain injury, PTSD, psychological problems, addiction, depression, suicide. These are problems that could be alleviated with the right kind of care. And we need to extend that into the VA system. And then maybe, just maybe, that'll be a model for what we can do with the rest of our healthcare system that's so unwieldy and is headed for serious trouble.
Yeah. And
so that was the point I tried to make. Yeah, so great, couple of great articles you write on what this week?
On this particular question about the ultra low fat diet for lowering LDL, it's not necessarily going to work, and certainly not in a setting where there's prediabetes and diabetes, which is a question too, because it just doesn't work that way very well.
Good.
So
drhoffman.com is the place to go to subscribe to our newsletter. Mm-hmm. You're already downloading or subscribing to our podcast. Get the newsletter, get the full experience. Lots of information to obtain via drhoffman.com. And I want to thank you, Layla, for joining us on today's Intelligent Medicine podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.